On Friday's page one, Libya after Gaddafi. The only leader many Libyans had ever known died after the fall of his last stronghold, the town he called home. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton is in Pakistan. Her message, Pakistani leaders have to choose between fighting terrorists or supporting them. And we'll get an advance look at a new biography of Apple computer chief Steve Jobs. I'm James Barron. All the news that's fit to podcast begins right now. Our top story says Colonel Muammar al-Qaddafi's death set off wild celebrations in Libya. The 69-year-old former dictator died after the fall of his last stronghold, the town he called home. American-supplied surveillance drones alerted NATO to a long convoy leading the neighborhood Qaddafi was believed to have been living in. A senior Western official in Europe says French Mirage fighters swooped down and blasted two vehicles in the convoy. Qaddafi apparently crawled from there to where he was captured. Qaddafi was the first leader killed since the Arab Spring uprisings began. In Washington, President Obama said Qaddafi's death signaled the start of a new chapter for Libya. During nearly 42 years in power, Qaddafi was one of the world's most eccentric dictators. At times he was condemned by the West, at times he was sought out. Correspondent Anthony Shadid says Qaddafi's legacy is surprisingly personal.
What was most remarkable about Colonel Qaddafi's reign was how little of institutions he left behind. Save for the state oil company, there wasn't much of a government, not much of ministries, not much administrative structure to bind together one of the largest countries in North Africa. The National Transitional Council, which is supposed to replace Colonel Qaddafi, faces some decisions on how to remake a country. The government is going to have to figure out a way to collect all the arms that have spread through the country. Nearly every man seems to have a rifle or more, and none of them seem all that willing to turn those weapons back over.
Times correspondent Anthony Shadid. Correspondent John Burns noticed similarities between the way Qaddafi was captured and the way Iraqi strongman Saddam Hussein was captured in 2006.
First of all, the hometown. Qaddafi in Sirte. He was actually born in the desert, but it became his adopted hometown. Saddam Hussein, of course, very close to his birthplace of Auja on the Tigris River. Both of them armed. Saddam with a pistol, which ended up on the wall of the Oval Office when George Bush was president. Qaddafi with a golden gun, a sort of James Bond touch. Both of them had vowed to stay and fight. They did just that. There is, of course, the risk that Qaddafi dead will become a legend to some people in Libya, even larger than he was in life. But I think, on balance, Qaddafi dead is less of a threat to the future of Libya than Qaddafi alive.
Correspondent John Burns. Also on Friday's page one, top Obama administration officials converged on Islamabad to make the case that Pakistani leaders have to choose between fighting terrorists or supporting them. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton warned that Pakistan would face serious consequences if it continued to tolerate safe havens for extremist organizations that kill Americans. Her comments underscored a growing realization that the war in Afghanistan now hinges on Pakistan's willingness to confront its own insurgents. Some of them have the support of the country's intelligence services. Friday's Times previews a new biography of Apple computer chief Steve Jobs. It says Microsoft founder Bill Gates visited Jobs a few months before his death on October 5th. The book says Jobs got the news that he had pancreatic cancer in 2003. He put off surgery for months and initially tried exotic diets, acupuncture, and herbal remedies he found on the internet. A vaginal gel has been shown to prevent herpes, according to the National Institutes for Health. The gel was tested in Africa and shown to be effective in protecting women against HIV. In this country, the gel could reduce the spread of herpes and HIV without forcing men to wear condoms. Inside Friday's Times, two New York City taxi medallions changed hands for $1 million apiece. That's the highest price since the city's modern taxi system began during the Depression. The price back then was $10. That works out to $157.50 if you adjust for inflation, but a lot of drivers back then just returned the medallions to avoid the $10 renewal fee. Kenya's sudden incursion into Somalia over the weekend caught the U.S. by surprise. Kenya has been one of Washington's closest allies in Africa. A senior U.S. officer wouldn't comment on whether the U.S. is now giving the Kenyans reconnaissance information. In Europe, Basque separatists declared a halt to violence in their struggle for independence. The separatist group ETA declared a unilateral end to its campaign of bombings and shootings. It released a video saying it wanted to take advantage of what it called a historic opportunity to reach a democratic resolution to the conflict.
In some ways, they're not that different from some of the protests that we saw coming from the Tea Party.
Some commentators have been echoing what President Obama said in that interview with ABC News. He was talking about the Occupy Wall Street protests. But conservatives and Tea Party activists are trying to discredit the comparison and the protesters. Times reporter Kate Zernike says it's a culture war that pits young against old and left against right, and they differ on the causes and the culprits. Friday's Business Day section says Kodak has put millions into becoming a giant in the inkjet printer business. One securities analyst says that has Wall Street worried the once preeminent film company is jumping from one buggy whip business to another. Kodak shares have lost about three-quarters of their value since the first of the year. In recent weeks, there have been rumors the company was going to file for bankruptcy. Kodak's stock fell 2.4% on Thursday to close at $1.24. That's our preview of Friday's Times. For a look at all of these stories, go to nytimes.com. You can send your comments about the Front Page Podcast to podcasts@nytimes.com. That's podcasts with an S on the end at nytimes.com. From our newsroom in New York, I'm James Barron. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us.